Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging. And their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week we're speaking to P-Mum Rachel, mum of Robbie, and the Tasmanian representative of Angelman Syndrome Association.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Fantastic. We have tried to have Rachel on for a little while,
but I know.
The planets or whatever aligned didn't.
Well, it was Mandy, not aligning with anything, really.
I mean, when do you align, Mandy?
Every now and then.
For those of you who care about our weather chat, it's hot. We're both in summer frocks, as my mum would say.
Yes.
And probably by the time this comes out, we'll have the ducted heating on.
Last week, we couldn't record because we had no power.
That's right.
So
it's been a fun week,
actually. So last week, we were just cancelling people and saying, I'm so sorry. Like, Kate's got no power. I've got no power.
Yep. You'll probably hear more about that in a snap.
Yeah, I reckon.
It was fun times.
So we're happy to be back.
We are.
And, would you like to say hello and introduce yourself, Rachel?
Hello, I'm Rachel, and as Mandy said, mum to a beautiful boy, Robbie, a couple of other kids, and on the Angelman Association of Australia.
Yes.
Awesome. And how old is Robbie, even though we'll get into that?
Robbie is five.
Five.
First year of full-time school.
Oh, wow. Let's talk about that. So let's ask you our questions.
Okay, so our first question is, do you have a band or a song or music that, like, lifts you up when you're feeling down or really gets you pumping when you're feeling happy?
Yeah, I love music, lots of different kinds. Anything I can sing to or dance to is, you know, fun for the good times. I love Ain't No Mountain High Enough or Uptown for a pick-me-up.
Yes.
And when I just need to have a good cry, I've actually come to really love a song by Ben Folds and Nick Hornby. It's called Picture Window.
Okay.
And I think it's a real P song, actually. It seems like it's the story of a mum in hospital with her child on New Year's Eve and looking outside of the fireworks and seeing the excitement and hope of the fireworks but feeling the lows of being in hospital and wondering what the future holds. It's really beautiful.
That is an anthem.
Oh, I'm going to have a listen to that after this.
It's about hope, I think.
Yeah.
And on those days when you think, I was excited about this, I thought this was going to work, I worked my hardest and it all falls apart.
Yes.
I think sometimes you just need to let that out. So that's why I love that.
Oh, it sounds perfect.
Amazing.
Yeah. We'll put that on the Spotify list. Yes. Annalise will do that for us. Mm. And that that Spotify playlist is awesome.
It's so awesome.
We want you all to go and find that. It's two P's playlist.
It's in the show notes.
Yeah. So do you?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I love it too.
So what about, did you win any awards at school? Are you an award winner?
A little bit. Yeah. I'm not a duck.
Right.
But I was a bit academic and I was a very good girl. I loved school. I ended up becoming a teacher. So school was the place for me. Having said that, I should add, I went to a tiny, tiny country school where there were probably only 12 people in my year.
Wow.
So the same people won the same thing. So, you know, every year I always got second in all the athletic things, you know, or third in, you know, backstroke, but first in long jump. You always knew who was going to get what because it's such a tiny cohort. So that probably helped. But I did win one award that was very special. That was I wrote a poem about my granddad when I was 17, about him having dementia.
Oh, wow.
And that won a poetry award, a national poetry award, which I was very – that's the one, like, special award.
Wow, I've got goosebumps.
Yeah.
That sounds beautiful.
We've had a couple of nice poetry award winners, actually.
We have.
I feel like maybe maybe the poetry judges actually are people that listen to the heart things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was definitely about the heart. He was someone who he had dementia, so he couldn't remember who anybody was, but he was so loving. Anyone he met, anyone who came to see him, he'd just joke with them or say lovely things or be so happy to see them, even if he couldn't remember that it was actually his daughter. Mm. You know, he was just such a loving man.
Oh, that makes me want to cry.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
All right, and our favourite question is, why are you a P or part of our P community?
Oh, I'm a P because 5 years ago I had a beautiful baby boy called Robbie who's turned out to have a very different and special path and has a disability and is quite medically complex. So that's introduced me to this beautiful P world.
Mm. Mm. And Robbie was your first child?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's learn about Robbie. Did you have a typical pregnancy or, you know, birth?
No, not really. I mean, the birth wasn't super unusual, but the pregnancy was pretty complicated all through. I had a bleed at 13 weeks, so I thought I might be miscarrying and went for scans. And in those scans and follow-up scans afterwards, they noticed some concerns with the placenta. And then because they were following up on that, later they noticed kidney abnormalities at around 20-ish weeks. So they realised that his kidneys and bladder and ureters were all swollen.
Right.
And that's when it got more serious. Mm. That's when I had one scan and they said, oh, you know, it's probably nothing. Let's just send you to the specialist scanner and did that. And then suddenly got a call at work saying, we want you and your husband, you know, at the major hospital for Tassie, which is in Hobart. You know, we want you there on Monday. We need to scan you and we want you to see the high-risk pregnancy clinic.
And did you have to wait a weekend?
Sorry?
Was that on a Friday?
Yeah. It was a Friday. I got a call at work. And then, yeah, had to be there on Monday morning. So that's when it all felt quite real. And then from then on, we had several trips to Hobart because they wanted me to be scanned there. They weren't really sure what the problem was, but eventually the theory they settled on was actually a little bit funny. We were trying not to find out the sex of the baby. Yeah. And so whenever they were scanning in that area.
Which is kidneys and.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
We had to look away. And then finally what they said to us at, like, I don't know, 36 weeks or something, look, what we think it is only occurs in one gender. So if you want to know what we think it is and what we're going to need to do, you will need to find out the sex of your baby. And we walked out of that room and my husband's a GP.
Right.
And he turned to me and he said, it's posterior urethral valves and it's a boy.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, oh, my gosh, really? So it was kind of nice to find out, like, oh, it's a boy, you know, like, yeah. I guess, yeah, like, we knew we had a boy's name and we had a girl's name and then we knew their name and
things
like that. Tricky because a lot of his family is medical and we had to try not to expect phrase because then they would guess it.
Of course.
Which they all did. They all did the same thing. They tried not to put out the word he.
Were you sad that that was taken off you, or were you like, now I know who my baby is?
I think in all the complications, it was just a nice surprise to be it's a little boy.
Yeah, a little Robbie, which is such a cute name.
It's a cute name.
It's actually, we had a lot of comments about the name. One of the nurses saying all the names he'd seen in NICU, a Christmas miracle called Barry, but never a Robbie.
Barry!
But it actually, like my mum said, was it after your cousin Robert or your uncle Robert or great-grandfather Robert? I said, no, it's after Robbie the reindeer. He's a claymation film.
Yeah, I know Robbie the reindeer.
Robbie Williams, and I was like, well.
No. So we named him after claymation reindeer.
Oh, that's the greatest story ever. there's some Wallace and Gromit's out there for people who love claymation.
It's the makers of Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, it is.
It was a busy time, and we actually had to relocate for the birth. They wanted,
of course.
So I live about 2.5 hours away from Hobart and had to move down to Hobart, from 37 weeks in case I went into labour early. Didn't have to be in the hospital. But just like spent that time staying with old housemates and waiting around to go into labour. And at 39 weeks, Lucas came down to be with me in case I went into labour. We didn't want him doing that long drive.
Yeah, stress.
But as it happened, they had to induce me at 41 weeks.
Wow.
So it was 4 weeks of waiting around for nothing. And 2 weeks of Lucas's leave used up before it all started. In the end, thankfully, it was actually kind of a nice time for us to bond before having him
have time for
ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucas was studying for his exam, so he was flat out doing all those homework. But then Robbie was born, pretty smooth birth, just, used suction, but apart from that, okay. A million people in the room because they knew he was complicated.
Yeah.
Apart from that, he was born, looking good. Had his first ultrasound at 5 hours old at our bed and then started his journey in the NICU.
Yeah, that's right. So you got to hold him and cuddle him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah.
And how long was he in NICU for?
NICU and special care nursery, switching between the two for 3 weeks.
Right.
So when he was born, they realised it wasn't actually posterior urethral valves. It took about a week to diagnose it. He had every possible test, x-ray, MRI, ultrasound, everything you could think of for about 5 days. And then they called us into that family room that you realize is the bad news room. Yeah. You don't know too well in it. And sat us down and said, we think what Robbie has is an ectopic ureter. So one of his ureters, instead of kind of plumbing into his bladder, was plugged into his prostate and so draining it all.
Yeah.
And it's actually really unusual. It more happens in girls.
Yeah.
Not, just ectopic ureters happens in girls. And they said he might need a kidney transplant one day and he will need a surgery, which we'd expected he would need a surgery.
Yeah.
So it was, suddenly all felt, very serious, learning about all the various complications with that, and he was going to be the first boy in Australia to have that surgery.
Wow.
It's amazing that they still did it in Tassie.
They
did. We had an amazing surgeon. She's still one of our favourite people. He had a surgery at 9 days old and then tiny, tiny baby just laying in this huge bed with all the wires and we couldn't pick him up. We had to just look at him for 3 days. Like he was in a coma. He was out of it, asleep, for the pain relief for 3 days. Couldn't touch him, couldn't hold him or anything. I know for, preemie parents, it's far, far longer than that. Sometimes they don't hold their baby for months.
You don't have to compare and contrast. It still happened and it's traumatic. Yeah.
Yeah. How was Lucas being a doctor and being a dad? And
I think that was a bit hard. He always knows a bit too much.
Yes.
And wants to help, but there's that fine line of being the dad and trying not to tread on anyone's toes. So that was a little bit tricky sometimes because he wanted to be able to help.
Of course.
But, you know, they were the doctors in the world.
Yes, of course. So,
yes, hard. That is very hard. First time dad. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. First time. And he actually had to go back to work while Robbie was still in hospital because he'd run out of leave.
Yeah.
And that was really awkward. I had to go back home and I was there on my own and staying in Ronald McDonald House by that point. Expressing every 3 hours, night and day, and going in and out of the hospital at night to visit and, you know, by yourself. Yeah. So it was a pretty rough start.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you have any family support?
Yeah, look, we're really lucky. We have amazing families on both sides. Mm-hmm. None of our immediate family lived in Hobart, but, you know, our parents kept coming down to see us and we had close friends in Hobart. And so that was really nice. You know, people would come and visit. It's tricky, of course, visiting NICU. It was thankfully pre-COVID, but still hard. You only have one.
It's still hard.
One has to leave.
And who do you choose? And it's all very tricky.
But no, we did have support. Yeah.
And then you got to bring him home?
Yes, that was amazing. Finally, at 3 weeks, he was discharged and there was a moment where I had said to a nurse, like, oh, the surgeon said, you know, 5 days post-surgery, we can go home. She said, oh, no, you don't go home just on Wednesday. You know, he's got to be feeding orally first and spend a night in the family unit. And I burst into tears. And then I think this ended up in your 2P's book as one of the kindness stories. Like, she started working behind the scenes and trying to fix things for us. And so that afternoon she said, I think you need to go for a walk. Just you two and the baby. So we got to take him out into the fresh air. And then she arranged for us to spend our night out of the hospital in the Ronald Mac unit instead of the family room because it wasn't available, so we could get home. And within a few days, me bursting into tears, she had us out of there.
Oh, wonderful.
And, you know, we'll never forget that.
Never.
No. We actually visited NICU and sent in a copy of the book for her. Oh, highlighted so she could see it.
Oh, that's the best story ever.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you never forget that.
No, you never forget.
You know, like, she really saw us and, got us out of there. We came home at 3 weeks and started settling in, thinking hopefully, you know, all the medical stuff was fine. But it did turn out that there was a lot more going on than we had initially thought.
So was there sort of typical behaviours and progressions, or was it always a bit like, oh, that's a bit weird, we better go back and talk to the paediatrician?
Yeah, I feel like there was nothing typical except that he smiled early. I remember I was just taking a picture of him in tummy time and he smiled and I caught it on camera and I think that was like, oh, it must have been just after 3 weeks.
Okay,
we were home. We were at my in-laws place. But he smiled early. But apart from that, I don't really think he hit any milestones that we could see. Like, he definitely seemed social, but we didn't realise at the time that he probably couldn't see very much at all.
Right.
So, you know, I would try and read stories to him and he would just stare out the window at, like, the bright light. And, you know, he had a double strabismus. His eyes would stray outwards and it, you know, Lucas asked initially in NICU, like, oh, is that a concern? And they said, oh, no, that's normal at this stage. But it just didn't
correct. No, he knew. Dad's no.
It didn't correct. And so, you know, we started seeing an ophthalmologist and, you know, he was really struggling to feed and so I was already seeing the lactation consultant. And then I started to notice he wasn't lifting his head. We did tummy time religiously and he never minded. He just lay there.
Yeah.
He didn't do anything.
Yeah, got it.
So eventually, you know, we got in touch with the paediatrician. Thankfully, because of the kidneys, we'd been assigned a paediatrician right away, and she was amazing and she still looks after Robbie. Mm. So I never had to convince anyone to give me a referral. I contacted her office and they sent us to the hospital physio and we started physio there. And then after a while she sent us back to the paediatrician and said, oh, I think the paediatrician really needs to look at this. Mm-hmm. And then we had this big assessment with the the physio, the speechy, the, like, all these people, and people I didn't even know who I suppose were training pediatrician.
Yes, yes.
All in the room, you know, roll over and trying to do this and talking and talking, and then finally they all left and the doctor sat me down and she said, oh, I think Robbie is delayed physically and intellectually and socially. Oh. And she just went on and, like, I hadn't thought socially because I thought, oh, at least he's smiling, you know, at least he's engaging. But obviously there's more to it than just that. But, yeah, she basically said everything. And she said, I think we should run some genetic tests. You know, it, she said, we may never know the cause, but let's check just in case.
And how old and was your beautiful baby at this point?
I think he was about 5 months, 5 or 6. So, yeah, we went downstairs to pathology and left a blood sample. Yeah, and then I think, I can't remember how long it was after, maybe a month or so, she met us again and said, you know, we think it's, there's a deletion on Robbie's 15th chromosome.
Right.
It could be either Prader-Willi syndrome or Acheron syndrome.
Right.
We'll have to do further testing to find out which one.
Okay.
And I can remember we just looked at each other and neither of us knew anything about it.
Of course.
You know, even though I was a teacher and Lucas was a doctor, you know, Lucas thinks he can remember maybe one slide about syndromes, but nothing came to mind. And I now know that doctor was also the doctor for Emma Price's daughter, Charlotte.
Yes, Charlotte.
So she knew what Angelman syndrome was and the significance of that. And she said, just go home and love your baby and enjoy every stage of his development, I think is what she said. Something really beautiful like that. And, you know, we went home and we did a little Google that night. And that was hard. We didn't keep doing it. We're not actually research people, but we spent one evening looking into both. That was pretty confronting because when you Google something like that, it's all very medical, you know, profiles of, you know, facial features and epilepsy and all the, you know, and, you know, the description of nonverbal. Child's not going to talk to you. They're never going to have a conversation. So that hit pretty hard, but we, I guess, spent the next couple of months hoping, I think I was hoping it was Prader-Willi because I think I remember seeing that Prader-Willi could be moderate to severe intellectual disability, whereas Angelman syndrome, it was just blanket severe. I might have that wrong, and apologies to anyone in the Prader-Willi community if I've
I think that sounds about right from the people I know.
Yeah, okay.
I was hoping it was Prader-Willi, and I thought because Robbie had been vocalising, I thought, oh, I think he will talk, you know. He's making these noises, I think he's going to talk. But, yeah, eventually we did meet with the geneticist and found out that it was Angelman syndrome and had to start getting used to that, which, yeah, it's just how do you take in that kind of information? Like your whole world just changes. Every baby you look at, every child you look at looks different. You're suddenly looking, where are all the kids in wheelchairs? Where are the, why am I driving down the street and every child I see is skipping and holding their parents' hand and talking? And, and where are they on the TV? I can't see anybody.
Like,
you just feel so isolated. Everything feels so unknown. And suddenly you're different from all your friends who've just had babies. And where are the others?
It is a really funny thing that when you go through whatever it is in life, you all of a sudden see those people. You know, when you're pregnant, everyone's pregnant. When you, I remember when I miscarried, everyone around me was pregnant, and I was like, oh, I can't tell anybody, and I'm going, you know, like things that now I hardly see pregnant people, right? Because I am now going to go through menopause. So, you know, we don't see, and it's, so you can't describe to people that all I can see is the opposite of what I, and at that point you don't have a concept of what your life is. So you you do catastrophize, and that's a perfectly normal response, and you probably also get that really big love burst for your child. It's a weird, it's like the inside out with the sorrow and the joy living so closely side by side.
How did you manage those days after the diagnosis?
Oh, look, it was very lonely. I was still struggling with feeding. I was still expressing all the time, so it was almost impossible to leave the house.
Yeah.
And when we did leave the house, it was for medical appointments or therapy. We weren't going to play groups.
No.
We did have one mum's group that we went to at my church. Everyone was really lovely there, but all the babies are just developing normally.
Yeah, yes.
How do you join in with the conversation? Oh, you know, they're talking about starting solids, and I think, I don't know what's going to happen here, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and their little worries and problems, you just think, I would give anything to be experiencing
exactly.
what you are.
I remember one of them saying, like, I'm just so sick of setting up the painting easel and watching them paint and packing it away again. And she's the kindest person.
Of course.
She didn't mean anything by that.
No, she is
sick
of it.
I just thought, oh, my goodness.
Oh, we've all
Will my child ever even paint?
I know.
I wish, or someone saying like, oh, well, it's so annoying when you're trying to sit them down and they just keep straightening their legs and they want to stand up. And I think, I can't get mine to wait there. Like, you just feel so different from everyone else. And I would just sit there kind of silently because I thought, I don't know what I can say
to you.
I'm just going to stop the conversation.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you also don't want constant pity and people looking at you and talking about you.
That awkward silence.
But also you're told, go and join mother's groups.
Go and
get out of the house. This will be good for your baby. Yeah. But I used to feel like I was walking into a room and the knife was just coming towards my heart. Like this fake knife would just stab into my heart and then twist it around for an hour.
And I think, who's this good for?
But I'm going for them, okay?
But
this is going to take me a week to get over.
Look, I want to say to their credit, about a year later, a couple of them talked to each other and then contacted me and they said, we realise that probably the topics we talk about might be painful for you and not really relevant. We'd really like to have a night where we talk about children with disability.
We found
the podcast. I know. It was during COVID, so by then we were meeting over Zoom in the evening.
Yeah.
They said, we found a podcast with interviewing these mums of children with disabilities and we'd really like it. If you're comfortable, we'd like to listen to it beforehand and then have Q&A with you.
Wow.
I just remember every single mum came that night.
This is how you do it, people.
And that just meant everything to me.
Friends.
And then they really listened and they did it. You know, they said, is there anything we shouldn't be doing? And I said, oh, well, I know we've always called Robbie little Robbie, but he's getting bigger now and I think some of the children think he's younger than he is because he can't sit up. But actually he's a boy now. He's not a baby yet. I think maybe we should stop calling him little Robbie. And they stopped, you know, everything I said, they did. So, you know, I have to say that has meant everything.
That means everything to me.
That's actually incredible. I have never heard anything like that in my life.
No, it's a couple of amazing, insightful women.
Yes.
Yeah, and they wanted it to be a safe place.
Wow. So, I mean, amazing, insightful women are my jam.
But also that's good. It's a wonderful story for people to hear if they're listening because we have a lot of non-Ps listening. And I can imagine that on the other side it's very challenging.
Yeah.
To know how to help. You don't know what you don't know.
No, of
course
not.
People want to help.
Of course.
But it's hard and it's scary. You think, I had people who, if I started crying, they felt upset and they said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
You're not making so many times.
I have to cry about, can I cry with you? But you never know, and everybody grieves differently. But I just think as long as you show that you love them and you're trying to follow their lead, people will know. They'll know that you care.
That's right.
Wow.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tell us about then, did you reach out to the Angelman syndrome community?
So at first it was a bit hard to find. I looked on Facebook for an Angelman syndrome group, and the Australian group uses the initials AS. It says Australian Families with AS. So I didn't actually find it for a while, but thankfully I think I must have got in contact with the association, because they then put me in touch with someone who wasn't was just sort of doing a stand-in role as the Tasmanian rep at the time, but she really was the representative for FAST, which is a sister organisation, the Foundation for Angelman Syndrome Therapeutics, and they actually are working towards like research to gene therapy for a cure, which would you believe, human clinical trials in Australia right now. So it's amazing work. But yeah, she contacted me, and when we were next in Hobart for another surgery, like I went and met with her family, and that was really special too. Like, I just think I wrote down so many things that she said that day about what it's like, and you know, how her younger children have coped as siblings, and you know, what just so many things she said, you know, reflections and examples and memories. I think I sat in the car and just wrote everything down.
Oh, I love it.
It was so special to meet someone.
Yeah.
But she was the only person I met for several years, because then there was COVID.
Yes.
Everything shut down. Mm. We weren't having state gatherings at all.
No.
There wasn't really anyone in the association role. Like, this lady, Chloe, was sort of filling in, but she was actually working for FAST and had a full-time job herself and was a busy parent. So there wasn't anyone in this role organising the social and support side. But yeah, social media was wonderful. I think I started following the hashtag Angelman Syndrome on Instagram so I could see families living life. And then I did find the Facebook group and started to make friends with people in other states of Australia, mums who are my age. It's so rare. I think we've worked out that in Tassie, about every 2 years, a child is born with Angelman syndrome. So I didn't know anybody whose child was Robbie's age. So then I started connecting with the Melbourne mums, and that really helped, being able to talk to them on Facebook. And I think you two have both talked about that as well. Like, you make these friendships online, and you can't believe that an online friendship could be as strong as it is, and you've never even met in person. There's some very special friendships, and that's actually how it came to be in the association, because one of my really good friends from Victoria, Chrissy, she became the Victorian rep of the association, and then she dogged me in to be the Tassie rep. She said, "You should do it. So there's no one here. You should be the Tassie rep." And that's how that happened.
How did you feel when she dogged you in? Did you want to do it?
Well, I think I said to her, like, "Oh, is there, you know, what's the time commitment, you know?" And she's like, "Oh, it's fine. It's just like a Zoom meeting every other month, and, you know, like an hour a week or something." I said, "Oh, that's great." But then I happened to join right before our biannual national conference. So I really shot myself in the foot there, because then it was suddenly like, can you make this video? Can you organize this? You know, can you contact these people? And I didn't like get an induction or anything. It was just straight in. But on the other hand, amazing, like, to join right before that conference and attend and be involved. And you get this inside view and a better understanding of like how the association came to be, because I was putting together, you know, video messages from all these people who'd been involved in its inception, and doctors who served in the first clinic, and you know, 30 years ago. Like, that was amazing to actually taking that history while doing those jobs and realize what an amazing group that we were part of, and all these matriarchs, you know, who started 30 years ago, these mothers in the 90s.
Oh, I'm in awe of them.
Yeah, and you just think, like, wow, when they got their diagnosis, they had no one. They had no
one. Yes, that's right.
They had no social media. They had no email. It was just letters and phone calls.
Yes.
And they built this amazing group that now I get to just walk into.
Yes.
Just standing on the shoulders of these people.
Yeah, the truth.
And it's the biggest gift. And I don't think we'll ever really appreciate it.
No.
But you just hope that you can build a little bit more, you know, for the next person, because thank goodness for those who did it before us.
That's right. Yeah. No NDIS. You know, just think about all the ways that they championed their child.
Yeah. And the children yet to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Incredible, yeah. Incredible humans. And mostly women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes you proud women. To be a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is one dad who's been on that association board since its inception.
Yeah. Right. There's a couple of good dads who, yeah.
He's still there.
Yeah.
Oh. He was a president for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, what a legend.
Yeah. And so how is Robbie today? Like how, what's his little personality like? And
oh, he's got the most beautiful personality. He is such a happy little boy. Happiness is actually a feature of the syndrome, yeah. which sounds like a strange thing. You don't think of that as a symptom, yes. you know, but yeah, a happy personality or exuberant demeanor is another way of phrasing it,
mm-hmm.
yep. Is a symptom or feature of the syndrome. But he also brings his own beautiful characteristics. He's really gentle. He loves holding hands and touching faces.
Yeah.
He is very patient, which is good because he has to wait a lot. And which now that we've got two younger kids, he works incredibly hard. We do a lot of physio, a lot of therapy at home.
Yeah.
Almost all the activities he does really are built around, like they're play-based, but we've got an extra motivation.
Yeah.
You know, you're reading this book because we want you to try and target this sound button, which you love, but hopefully it's going to help you learn to point a finger and then access a speech device. Like so he's patient, he's gentle, he's trusting, he's getting a bit cheeky, which is very cute. And yeah, he's the loveliest little boy. He loves water, which is another feature of the syndrome, a fascination with water.
Right.
He loves music, which we think maybe comes from us because we're both from musical families.
Oh.
And we love music, and he does all his favorite toys are, you know, tambourines and piano.
Yes.
He loves to bang away, and it's nice having seen older children with Angelman syndrome going to concerts with their siblings, you know, like music festivals.
Yes.
I think, wow. Robbie would love that.
Yeah,
that's going to be on the bucket list. We're going to do that. So he's a beautiful boy. Developmentally, he works so incredibly hard, and he's come so far. But obviously, compared to his peers, he's very significantly disabled. So he can't yet sit up or roll over by himself, but he can with assistance.
Mm.
And while he can't crawl or anything on his own, he can walk when we hold his hips, and he can walk around, which is amazing. It's a real game changer.
Yeah.
He stopped feeding completely at about 8 months. He had never been feeding well, and he had become failure to thrive. Not that anyone ever actually told me. I think our beautiful pediatrician was too tactful to use those words.
Oh, God. That sounds amazing.
He wasn't thriving, and then he caught a virus. Didn't drink anything for 24 hours, ended up in hospital for 2 weeks. That's when he was diagnosed with epilepsy because he just went into status having over drop seizures. And the same time he was diagnosed with sleep apnea, and also he just never recovered. So he is tube fed, but I don't actually think he minds. Like he doesn't. And, you know, it was confronting at first.
Yes.
But now it's just very much a normal part of our life. We try and get in. We just want him to enjoy food.
Yes.
And to enjoy the taste and the flavour, because food is a joy of life.
It is.
You know, when we're having ice cream or birthday cake, we'll give him a bit of the ice cream or something that is safe for him to try. But apart from that, I don't think he really minds. And so it's just a normal part of life. He is nonverbal. He can sign more, which is a, you know, unforgettable day after 2 years of modeling, signing, and just thinking this is never going to happen.
Yes.
And then I remember seeing one day he was flicking this little spinner with one finger.
Yep.
I thought, if he can flick that spinner with one finger, he can bang his chest to sign more. It's not out of me, Robbie.
Yes.
And so then, you know, we really like renewed our efforts and started doing it all the time, over and over again. And we went on a beach holiday and we walked him into the waves and then turned around and started walking back out, and he banged his chest. And we walked straight back into the ocean.
Of course you did.
Can stay here
in
all day.
And out, and he was signing more. And that weekend he said, like, we blew raspberries on him and he signed more. We did more.
Beautiful mum.
And then he was sounding more every time he got out of the bath. Hilariously, after 2 years of, you know, it took him 2 years to learn to sign more. It only took him about 1 week to realize it wouldn't automatically get him everything he wanted.
Yes.
And then he pretty much quit. But he's thankfully he's recovered again. He's decided it's worth a try. So he will sign more. And that's his way of saying he wants things. You know, we'll walk him past the piano and he'll stare at it and bang his chest.
Yeah.
And we'll
yeah.
say, hey, come on, guys, you know, you want to play
the piano.
Next time we're working on his finish because everybody deserves to be able to say, I've had enough.
Yes, yes.
So that's the next one. Yeah. And he uses a pod. We model it and we're, you know, going to be trialing some high tech. Options as well.
Yeah.
Later this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just want to say you're a beautiful mum. You've done really, such a great job.
You really have.
You know.
Yeah.
And yeah. yeah. And I'm emotional because I don't know. It's the love.
Yeah.
And you'll do anything for him.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to make me cry now.
Yeah, well, well love I don't everything. Mean to, but it just, yeah. that's what jumps out.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, you have talked about this before, but, you know, people say, oh, you're a super mom, I don't know how you do it, or I could never cope. And I think, I mean, firstly, don't say that.
No, because please don't.
It sounds like, to us, I think we think people are saying, like, oh, it's fine for you.
Yeah, yes. But I couldn't
you
do it.
You are always going to be fine with this.
Yes.
But, you know, the way I feel about how hard it would be, that doesn't apply to you. But actually, no, it felt just as hard.
Yes.
Yes.
I
and
just
every
thought,
day, actually.
Yeah, I thought this is never going to be okay.
No.
There's no way this can ever be okay.
Yes.
Yep.
It's never going to get better.
Yes.
We're always going to be his parents. He's always going to need our care.
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
I just felt there was no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
It was such a dark time.
Yes.
But you love your child.
Yep. And yes.
Like the strange thing is, you know, the lowest days when we were at home alone doing endless tummy time and he was never lifting his head and I would just look out the window and think, all the other mums are out there at the playground.
That's right.
They're blueberry picking.
Yep.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yes.
I'm in here.
Yes.
Stuck between an endless cycle of expressing and tummy time.
Yes. Yep.
But then it's when you cuddle that baby who's brought all this diagnosis into your life, that's what makes you feel better.
Yes.
I know.
You know.
It's a weird loop.
It's so,
yeah.
It's not what you'd expect, you know, but they're the comfort.
Yes.
Even though it's their diagnosis that has brought you this grief.
Yeah.
They're not the grief.
No.
They're your beautiful
them.
Baby.
Yes.
For your baby.
That is
do whatever
exactly
they
right.
need. And anybody else, you know, most people would, like, not everyone has, you know, the social supports or whatever. You know, some people have already been traumatized before they've had children.
Yes,
not
that's right.
All of
not
that.
Everybody can cope, actually.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's true.
Yeah, most people, you do whatever it takes for your baby. And so I'm sure all of my friends who say that to me would do the same.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, they would.
They would. They would do what they had to for their baby.
Yeah,
that's right. Nothing's more important. That
no.
is so true about them comforting you because that is exactly what Molly does to me.
Yes.
So even though we've had a wicked patch and then we have this big cuddle and then we're all good and it's you just kind of explained something I haven't really thought about
You've
before.
Articulated
it's exactly
it really well.
What happens.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's the love.
Yeah.
It's the love. Yeah. And it's, I mean, every parent hopefully understands love in a different way.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But
of course.
It is this unique love.
Yeah, we're very lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost more fierce. And more
oh, it is more fierce.
More protective.
Yep.
Definitely.
And you feel more devastated if they get hurt.
Yes.
My other little kids get hurt. It's so awful. I know they'll be fine.
Oh, they
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those kids bounce.
Yeah.
I know they'll be fine. And I know they have, like, if my two-year-old falls, she puts her hand out and she can protect herself.
Yes,
if
right.
Rolly falls, oh, terrible.
Of course.
Yeah, no. Yep.
It's so much. It's terrible.
No,
you know,
everyone understands what you're saying.
You just know they're so vulnerable.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
And they need that.
Very
extra.
Precious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So he started school this year. Is that right?
He started school last year. So he did kinder last year, which was part time.
Right.
And this year is what we call prep.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Or foundation.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So he's in full time this year. So he started back a week and a half ago. Last week was his first 5-day week.
Right.
He seems to be doing pretty well, which is good. It was harder than I maybe expected starting school last year. I'm a teacher and I never thought I'd be that parent.
Yes.
You know, crying about drop-off.
Oh,
but
no.
It's different when your child can't tell you what happened.
Yes.
You know, when you think all I'm going to know about your day is what an adult tells me.
Yes.
And they won't see everything.
No.
And
they
won't see it from his point
might
of view.
Not want to say everything.
Yes.
You know, like if they've had a really busy day and they haven't been able to get to you.
Yeah, they're not going to tell you.
They're not going to want. And I know that as a teacher. I know the classroom's a busy place. You can't do everything.
No.
You know, but
mums don't do everything. So,
no, and mums don't, and we don't do everything at home all the time. But, you know, I know that he can't tell.
Yes.
Tell me if he had to sit in his wheelchair all day.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, that vulnerability, just extra hard.
It's very significant, actually.
Yeah. He goes to a support school, and I'm really, really glad that that's where he is. And, and I, like, there are children with Angelman syndrome who go to mainstream school as well. And they love the social benefits, and I do feel that misses out on that a bit. There's pros and cons, by the way.
Of course. There is.
But for me, I really wanted him to be in a school where they understood how to communicate using POD, where they had experience with pump feeds, where everything was accessible already with the wheelchairs.
Yep.
They've got all the ramps, you know.
Yeah.
They have a wheelchair swing, things like that. So I wanted all of that. And that has been really good. It did take some settling in at the start.
Yeah.
It was a bit more complicated than I expected.
Yes.
But thankfully this year they placed him with his teacher from last year and one of his teacher aides. And that's been amazing because I haven't had to start from scratch explaining it. They already know him and they can teach the others.
That's the best feeling ever.
Oh, yeah. It's so reassuring.
Yeah.
And I know that they know him really, really well. They write wonderful learning goals for him. And so, yeah, I'm really, really pleased that he has some of those same people. And I think the day I realised that I think he does like school was in term one last year, I was driving in and I turned into the turning circle of the school and he started laughing.
Ah.
I thought, oh,
he wants
that's
to
reassuring.
Be here.
You know, like, you know, he is such a happy person. It's hard to tell what he does or doesn't like.
Yes, yes.
But he never seems unhappy. To school, and he also seems happy when I pick him up. And I actually ended up doing relief at that school last year, and it was so funny. I would see him in the corridor, and I'd be so excited.
Yeah.
I would kneel down and mommy, you know, and just look straight past me.
This is not your place, Mum.
No, I thought he'd never be too cool for me, but
I'm embarrassed to have my mum.
Not want anything to do with me. So he must be okay.
That is so gorgeous. Oh, Rachel, beautiful. Tell us about your role in the association and what are your plans or what are your dreams for the association?
Well, I am the humble Tasmanian state rep.
Yep.
I stepped into a role that there was no competition for, so I can't say.
Congratulations.
You know, I'll stick it on a resume.
Oh, but, yes, you will.
It probably sounds, you know, more illustrious than it is, but, look, it's been lovely over the last year realizing that people do want to get together. Like I think when I stepped into the role, I thought, okay, like I better now contact all these families. And I didn't actually know the families that were in Tassie, but, you know, one of the previous reps gave me contact details and started getting in touch and people started coming out of the woodwork. And we think there's about 13 people with Angelman syndrome in Tasmania.
Right.
Not all of them want to be in the association.
Yes.
So once you hear about someone, and you try and pass on your contact details, but they don't always.
Yep.
They want to be part, and that's fine.
Yep.
You know, they probably have their own friends and family, and that's how they want to live life. So not everybody wants to be in the group, but we think there's about 13. So I started contacting those families, and we were going down to Hobart for just a holiday weekend. And I said, oh, you know, if anybody wants to catch up, like, we'll meet at the park at this time. And I thought, everybody's so busy.
Yeah.
You know, it's going, we might just get one or two. Everybody came. And that was the first gathering in the state in, well, at least since Robbie was diagnosed.
Right.
That was the first kind of incidental gathering.
Yeah, yeah.
It was about families and us.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it went on from there, and that was really special. One of the mums there, she's had the next child after Robbie, and so the boy is only two. And that was her first time meeting, you know, other families and seeing older people with Angelman syndrome, which can be hard when you've got a little baby.
Yes, it can.
And then you see an adult in a wheelchair and, okay, you know, that's what it's going to look like. Or, but she was unsure if she was going to come. And she did end up coming and she messaged me afterwards and she said, thank you so much. I'm so glad I came. I feel better about it now than I expected.
Yeah.
It was just so hopeful to be able to talk to other parents. Mm. And, you know, like one of the mums there, her daughter's in her 20s, you know, and she's like the nana to the group. And she's, you know, talking to all of us and brought presents for some of the kids. And she's checking on everyone in between gatherings. Mm. She's one of the previous state reps.
Yes.
Sort of still has that mothering.
Of course.
And then actually last week was International Angelman Day on the 15th of February, because February is Rare Disease Month.
Yes.
Angelman syndrome is a missing gene on the 15th chromosome. Mm. So that's why it's February. And look, it was like Christmas for us in terms of organisational stuff for the association, you know, the posting you're doing on social media, the awareness, the fundraising, organising a gathering. So my main role for Tassie was organising a state gathering. So we had a huge picnic on Saturday at a park in Launceston this time, because we try and alternate both ends of the state. And it was so beautiful. I was actually really proud. Our numbers weren't that far behind the biggest states. You know, a lot of states had about 40 people. Victoria had 80. You'll be proud to know they had the record. But we actually had about 30. So that was really almost everyone who could come
came.
Yeah. Right? There were families travelling and they couldn't make it for various reasons or, you know, with illness.
Yeah.
But so many people came and it was just so special. You know, there are people there who they've got photos of their daughters meeting when they're, you know, in primary school.
Mm.
Now, here are their daughters together and they're very important.
Yeah, and they're friends.
Yeah. They're women who've done the journey together, you know, long before I came along.
Mm.
And we've got, you know, kids ranging from Robbie was the youngest there at 5 and the eldest was, I think, 43.
Yeah, right.
So we've got all these different ages. We've got boys and girls. We had bubble machine. We had giant bubbles. We had
face painting. Right,
one of the teenage girls, the sisters, just brought along blue face paint.
Oh, awesome.
We had an angel cake and blue jelly because blue is the colour for the association. It was just a really beautiful day.
Mm.
And I thought afterwards, you know, when you get a diagnosis like this, what you see is the negative. That's what you're told.
Yeah.
You don't actually know the community you're going to get with.
No.
And it's so powerful. Like I was reflecting about it afterwards and thinking, like, I actually felt really proud to be there with that group.
Yes.
And I couldn't have imagined 5 years ago that I would feel proud, because I felt so self-conscious going out with other people would stare at me. And especially when he had a nasogastric tube, people would ask what it was. And, you know, they could see that he was disabled, but they didn't know what was going on. And I thought, you know, this has changed so much, because I got so proud to be part of that group of amazing people.
Yes.
You know, siblings who are the most empathetic people, parents who have had to be strong.
Yeah.
And beautiful people with Angelman syndrome who just bring so much joy as much as their lives are challenging, and that's challenging for us, you know. But this is a really amazing group, and I'm glad that I met that community. I'm glad that I'll always have these friends, and I see these people who I never saw before.
Your
eyes are opened to see the people who've gone through hardship and who've been brilliant
and fought for someone they love.
And Robbie brought them.
Robbie brought them to us.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
I feel so grateful for that. So there were state gatherings all over the country. We had buildings lighting up blue, including in Launceston, we had the town hall light up blue.
Oh, gorgeous.
We did a little campaign of putting together profiles of people with Angelman syndrome, you know, beautiful pictures of their faces and a little bit about their personality, their likes and dislikes, because there are still actually a lot of, statistically we know there are people in Australia with Angelman syndrome who are undiagnosed.
Right.
That gets misdiagnosed, so palsy or autism.
Yeah.
So we're still looking for those people. You know, we call them our hidden angels, and we're still trying to find them all and bring them into the community.
Yes.
And a lot of people on their way to a diagnosis, their doctor might say, oh, they don't look like they have Angelman syndrome.
Right.
Like one of the features can be their hair and blue eyes.
Mm.
But Robbie's got brown hair.
Yes.
And hazel eyes. You know, he doesn't have that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
but he still has ambulances, you know. Yeah. So we want to raise awareness so that those people can get an accurate diagnosis and be part of this amazing community.
Very important. And I think for them as well to know, oh, there's a group, and for any sort of research or, you know.
So we could keep talking to you for hours and hours. Really good.
Yeah.
But is there anything we've missed that you want to share with our community?
I think for me, my heart is still with the people who've got a fairly new diagnosis.
Yeah.
That's not long behind us. And I guess, like, I want to pass on what was said to me. So, you know, I was put in contact with Emma Price from Source Kids, you know, her daughter Charlotte, because she's from Tassie and it's very Tasmanian. My cousin was the best man at their wedding.
Everybody knows
everybody's Tasmanian story. But, yeah, my auntie put me in touch with her, and she, I remember her message that she sent me. This is before Charlotte had passed away, and she said, you know, it does get easier. And she said, it's so rewarding watching Charlotte develop, and I celebrate her milestones more than any of my other children.
Yes. You
know, it's so much more meaningful. And she just talked about what it was like. And that meant so much, because I think, you know, people who don't share that diagnosis or disability, you know, they might try and encourage you or comfort you and say, oh, it'll be fine, or whatever, you know. But hearing someone who's actually walking the path saying it does get easier, that really meant a lot.
Yes.
And then when I joined the Australian Facebook group for Angelman Syndrome, there was a big welcome post. Welcome, Rachel and Lucas and their son, Robbie, you know. And everybody commented, and they're like, this is our daughter, she's 16, we live, and you're going to be okay. We all know what it's like. Like, just this welcome. And so I guess what I would say to anybody with any diagnosis, you know, any mum out there or sibling, that, you know, you just need to find your tribe.
Yeah.
And for us, like, that's, you know, the Angelman Syndrome Association, and the social media groups that we're on. And it can be other things as well. Like, it can be, you know, at your child's school or at a place that they do therapy or NAPA or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, you need to find your tribe. Easier said than done sometimes, but, you know, it takes a little time, but it is so worth it. 2Ps is another tribe that's been amazing for me. And I swear there are so many days when I was so lonely, but I could put on the podcast and I felt I was talking to someone who knew. And it sounds cheesy, but so many times, you know, driving out of Hobart after a surgery, I would hit that highway. Put on the podcast, and I knew on that drive home I had someone with me who knew.
And it was safe.
I knew I had a friend. So to anyone out there who's got a new diagnosis for their child, just, you know, hang in there.
Yeah.
It does get easier.
Yeah.
And when you find the people you can do life with, you can do it together. And
it'll be beautiful.
It's going to be okay. You know? Our children are beautiful. They're worth all the love and all the effort, but we need it. To make it happen.
It's true, Rachel. True. Thank you.
We couldn't finish on a more beautiful note.
I know.
I don't want to, you know, make other guests feel bad, but you've been a perfect guest.
We've had two Tassie, Lewis and you. So
yes,
Tassie,
you're back-to-back Tassie at the
representing.
Moment.
Yes. Well, we thank you so much
you,
for sharing
you,
with
you.
Us.
Thank you.
And all the details will be in the show notes if people want to find you, follow you, all that sort of stuff.
Yep. Yep.
So thank you for being patient with me last year. We got you on. And and
we
thank
look
you.
Forward to hearing all about Robbie.
Yeah. And
he's worth it. He's a beautiful story. He's a gorgeous boy.
Yeah.
Thank
of course.
You, Rachel.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh.
Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.